Marriage Today presents Becoming One Soul by Jimmy Evans.
Luke chapter 10, Jesus is being confronted by a lawyer who is, and this was a lawyer of the Word of God. It says, a lawyer stood up and tested Jesus, saying, Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? And he said to him, what is written in the law? What is your reading of it? And he answered and said, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself. And he said to him, you have answered rightly. Do this and you will live. Now, this is a very interesting text of Scripture because this man is coming to Jesus and he's saying, what do I need to do to get to heaven, basically? And Jesus said, well, what do you read in the Bible? What do you read in the Old Testament? They didn't have the New Testament. And he said, well, the way I read it is I'm supposed to love the Lord with all my mind, with all my body, with all my spirit, my heart, and with all my soul. And Jesus said, that's right. Jesus validates that there are four dimensions to our being. Our heart, which is our spirit. You don't have a spirit when you're not born again. It's dead. Adam and Eve died spiritually when they sinned against God. And we are all born with a dead spirit. And when we receive Jesus, we're born again. He comes into the inside of us, and now we have a spirit that can commune with God. We have a body. We have a mind and we have a soul. There are four dimensions to our lives, and all four of those were made primarily to love God. In fact, in Matthew 22, Jesus said, loving God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, all the Bible is encapsulated within that commandment. All the law and the prophets come true within that commandment right there. Your mind was not made to think. It was made to love God by thinking first. That's the most important thing you do with your mind. Your body wasn't just made to act or feel. Your body was made to love God first before anything else. Your spirit was made by God to love Him first. Your soul, and that's what I'm talking about in this message, your soul is the seat of your will and your emotions. And Jesus said, love God with all your soul. And He validated when this man said, I believe that I'm supposed to love God with all my soul. Jesus said, that's right. So this message is called Becoming One Soul. Talk about being soulmates with your spouse. Another title for this message could be Becoming Soulmates. And so, and I think it's important. I think that there's a lot of misinformation in our world today about becoming soulmates. And this is a perfect message for every single person or divorced person, you're not married, but also for every married person, because it is important that we're soulmates, but there's so much misinformation that can actually set us up for failure. And I want to talk to you about how you can become soulmates and have the marriage of your dreams. And I want to begin by saying Karen Evans is my soulmate. We've been married for 40 years, and we dated for 4 years, and we've been married for 40 years. And I'm married to my soulmate. And I want to tell you how we met and how we married, and I want to talk to you about how we're soulmates and how you can be soulmates with your spouse. Well, Karen and I went to elementary and junior high school together, but we didn't know each other. We had a very big class. We're baby boomers. We had 770 people in our graduating class. We had a huge class. So, but I met her in biology class in high school. We were in the same biology class. And she was dating some jerk senior. And we had an annex building, and so I'd walk out to the annex building, and she was always standing on the porch of the annex building with this senior, and she wore his letter jacket, and so it made me sick. And I sat behind her all year, and I knew she was beautiful, and I wanted to date her, but first of all, I had to run him off. He finally got out of the picture. So I asked her out for our first date, a Three Dog Night concert. How many of you remember? Eli's coming. And so I took her out to Three Dog Night concert. And I loved it. I mean, we fell in love. We dated a lot. But then our dating kind of turned bad because my friends really came before Karen. I even told Karen, my friends come before you. I was not faithful. I was a very immoral person. I was not born again. I was wild and just all that stuff. And so we broke up several times while we were dating. And then we would go back together again. And this embarrasses me to say this, but it's true. I never proposed to Karen. I never got down on a knee and took her out someplace nice and proposed to her. I didn't know you're supposed to do that. No one had ever told me that. And we started talking about getting married, and I never asked for her hand in marriage. I never went to her dad and said, can I marry Karen? Of course, he hated me. He'd have said no. Karen's parents brought boys over to meet Karen while I was there. That's kind of how you know they don't like you. I finally got that. I bought Karen a very cheap ring. I worked at Scrub It Up Car Wash, I did not have a high level of discretionary income, to say the least. And this is the ring that I bought Karen. This was actually her wedding ring when we got married. And you said, well, Jimmy, why are you wearing it? Well, I lost my ring playing golf, and that's not good. But so then she got a nice diamond wedding ring, and so I got this one. But a week before we got married, my friends threw me a bachelor party, and I was unfaithful. I cheated on Karen. Again, that's just who I was. And Karen told me she wouldn't marry me a week before we got married because of how wild and immoral I was. And I didn't blame her. But the morning after my bachelor party is when I received Christ. And I didn't receive Christ because of Karen. I didn't receive Christ because Karen wouldn't marry me. I received Christ because sin lied to me. I was a very good sinner. I was an extremely good sinner. I woke up every day with a desire to sin, and every day I went to bed very successful. But empty. And I had all these things I wanted to do. I didn't have anything that I wanted to do that I didn't do. Sin. But I went to bed empty. And I would lay in bed empty after parties and fraternity parties and all this, stuff that I did. And I would think, why am I not happy? I feel lonely, and I feel empty. And so the night of my bachelor party was another example. All my friends were there. We did everything that you would think would make you happy, all the things the world says would make you happy. And I went to bed empty, and I woke up and I looked at myself in the mirror, and for the first time I felt bad. I'd had no conscience. I never felt bad about anything I did. I felt good about it. And I woke up that day and I felt bad, and Karen said she wouldn't marry me. I told her what I'd done, and I said, Jesus, I'll serve you for the rest of my life and I'll never turn back. And I've served him all of my adult life and I've never turned back. And the instant I invited Jesus into my life, that empty place filled up. And I became happy. And when I laid in bed at night, I didn't feel alone anymore. Something had changed, and Jesus told me the truth. And Jesus was the reality in my life that I had been looking for. So Karen told me she wouldn't marry me. But after a couple of days, I lost all my friends that day. And Karen began to hear about, the fact that I had changed and lost my friends. And so we began to talk, and we decided to go ahead and get married. In our wedding, we got married. We had a destination wedding at Karen's parents' house. We got married in her parents' living room. It was a very small wedding. Very awkward wedding. Her parents hated me, and I hated her parents. And I'd only been a Christian for a week. I didn't know it was wrong to hate, so I still hated them. Karen's mother had a Bible study praying that we wouldn't get married, okay? And those were the women doing our wedding. So our wedding is me looking at Karen's parents, who I hated, all these women who had been praying against us, okay? And those women, by the way, we get married, those women have helped us with Marriage Today fundraisers for many years, and I've told them to their face, you're the worst prayers in the history of the world. Look what you did. You're supposed to be praying we wouldn't get married. They're sweet people. I think I'm saved because of them, actually. Now, this is our wedding picture, okay? Just look at this picture. This is God love us. God, in Karen beautiful, and I haven't changed a bit. Okay. We had the most awkward wedding ever. And then we just didn't have a good time on our honeymoon. I can just tell you right now, it was, because I'd been bad the week before, and that was still kind of, we tried, to have fun, and we tried to act like nothing had happened, but it had, and so our honeymoon wasn't that great. We came home early from our honeymoon. We went to Colorado Springs and came home early, and so then our lives together started, and, I was a new believer, and we were trying, but I was a jerk and a chauvinist, and we went to church on Sunday, and I read my Bible every morning, but I was a terrible husband. I worked all the time. I played golf all the time. I didn't meet any of Karen's needs, and after several years of marriage, we were just on the brink of divorce, and Karen confronted me one time about playing golf, and I told her to get out of the house. I was tired of her complaining, because that was just who I was, and she was in the bedroom crying. I was sitting in the living room thinking, I'm going to lose my marriage. I don't know what to do. And I'm going to pick up here in just a minute, but let me just say, I married my soulmate. And I know that my story kind of pops a lot of bubbles, because there are a lot of myths out there about soulmates and who your soulmate is and how you find your soulmate. And our story just doesn't fit with that mold. But I want to say, I married my soulmate, and Karen and I have been married 40 years, and she is the love of my life. She's my best friend, and she's my soulmate. I want to tell you three myths, dangerous soulmate myths, that need to be exposed, because these set us up for failure and they set us up for wrong expectations. Myth number one is my soulmate will be just like me. This is the first myth. If I find my soulmate, they're going to be just like me. In fact, if I really find my perfect soulmate, we really won't have to talk, because we're just going to be able to sit and look at each other and know what each other's thinking. We're just going to sit in the house all day just giggling. That's so funny. And we're just always going to do the same thing, you know. And you say, you know what? Yeah, I know what. Let's go do that. Okay. And you just... You're always just right there. That's what your soulmate is, right? And see, and I think online dating is fine. I know a lot of people have very good success stories with online dating. But the dangerous thing about this online dating is when you go on there and you match in all the categories, even if you match in all the categories, you're very different people. Listen, compatibility is based on character and values, not sameness. You're not the same. If you find your perfect soulmate, they're very, very different than you are. Compatibility means you're a believer in Christ. We share the same values. We're on the same ship going the same direction. Our destination, our purpose, our destiny in life matches, but we're very different people. Our personalities are different. Our giftings are different. Our perspectives are different. And if you expect that you marry your soulmate and they're going to be the same as you, it'll break your heart. Let me say this. This is the reason that a lot of people stay single and a lot of people get divorced. It's because they keep encountering the differences in people that they're dating. You need to be a Christian. You need to have basic compatibility with character and values. But you meet a person, they're so different, or you married a person, and after marrying them, you find out how different they are, worse than you thought before, because they faked it really good. And you wake up and say, that's not my soulmate. Because my soulmate's just like me. No, they're not. No, they're not. They're very different. Number two myth about soulmate is, if I marry my soulmate, we won't have any big problems and we'll always be in love. And this has set you up for huge disappointment. But the point is, if you marry your perfect soulmate, you're going to have issues that you're going to have to work through. You know, and if you prepare properly and if you marry a believer and things like that, it minimizes those things, but you're still going to have big issues that you work through. But let me say this, it's important to the devil that you believe this. Because if you believe that if you marry your soulmate, your feelings will always be positive and you'll never have any big problems, then when you wake up one day and your feelings are negative or you don't have any feelings and you're going through problems, that's when the devil whispers into your ear, you married the wrong person. I remember the nanosecond when Karen and I were fighting, and we were at that point of fighting all the time and on the brink of divorce, and we had a huge fight, and she walked off, when she walked off, I remember where I was standing in our house when I thought the thought, she's not the one for me. What a tormenting thought to go through you, that I'm stuck for the rest of my life with this person that I'm not compatible with and they're not my soulmate. Because my concept was, at that point, when you marry the right person, it just, everything happens right. You don't have to work at it, okay? But that's just simply not true. Soulmates are not born, they're made in the trenches of life. And the greatest marriages are not marriages where two people were born with a silver spoon in their mouth and everything went right. The greatest marriages are where two committed believers come together, roll up their sleeves, fight the good fight, and you wake up one day and said, you could have left me 13 times, but you didn't. And you're my soulmate. Another myth about being soulmates is, my soulmate will always make me happy and meet all of my needs. No person can always make me happy. The basis of happiness is God. Only God can meet our deepest needs, and only God can truly give us a foundation of happiness. Let me say, if you have a relationship with God, you can be happy when people are all acting weird. But when you come to an individual and you put the responsibility on a person to make you happy, you've set that person up for failure and yourself up for failure. No person can make me happy all the time. Karen makes me happy a lot. Sometimes she doesn't make me happy. you know, when she turns the Cowboy game off, you know, when she doesn't want me to watch the Rangers, something like that, you know. But Karen makes me happy, but the basis of my happiness is not Karen Evans. The basis of my happiness is Jesus Christ. Your soulmate's not going to make you happy all the time, and they're not going to meet all of your needs. They'll meet some of your needs, for sure. But here's just kind of an encapsulated version of what I believe the soulmate myth is that needs to be completely rejected from our lives. When I marry my soulmate, they will be just like me. I'll always be happy and have all of my needs met. We won't have big problems, and we'll always be in love. Baloney. It's not truth. It's a lie. That will set you up for heartache. It will set you up for a false sense of failure in your life. And I want to go back to Karen and I and just say, we did everything wrong. I mean, our dating was bad. Our wedding was bad. Our honeymoon was bad. I was a jerk in marriage, but I married my soulmate. Here are the three choices that create soulmates, because it's a choice. It's choice-based. By the way, your soulmate, this is where your will and emotions are. When we talked about the four dimensions of life earlier, there's our body, there's our spirit, there's our mind, and there's our soul. Our soul is where our will is based. Another word for soulmate is willmate. Out of our wills, we make choices that create the bond between us, the soulmate bond between us. So here are the three choices that create soulmates. Number one, choice that I make is empathy. And this is, research has proved, the most recent research on marriage has proved, this is one of the main things that makes good marriages is empathy. The word empathy means understanding and entering into another person's feelings. Understanding and entering into another person's feelings. Well, this is something that humans can do that animals can't do. This is what sets us apart from the animal kingdom. I have the ability to project myself over to another person and to say, I wonder what they're going through. I wonder how this makes them feel. See, empathy means I'm putting myself in your shoes. Animals can't do that. Only humans can do that. When we're dating, we're extremely empathetic. When you meet a person that you fall in love with, you put yourself in their shoes. Let me give you an example. Our first date, Karen and my first date, I worked at Scrub It Up Car Wash that day. I washed my car great. It was a perk of the job. And I went to pick Karen up, and I had a 1964 Dynamic 88 Oldsmobile that my mother had totaled and then given me. My two older brothers, Damon and Lucifer, they both had cars. My mother had wrecked two cars and given them to them too. It was a gift that kept on giving in our family. My mother was a horrible driver. So I have this car, the entire passenger side's been wiped out. So I pulled up to Karen's house the first night of our dating, and I pulled up on the good side of the car. It was years before she knew there was a bad side to the car, because I just always strategically parked, you know, where she can. So I was so, you know, Mr. Don Juan that night. And so she gets in the car, and as I'm driving, I don't want to hit any bumps. I want to be so careful as I'm driving, you know, and every time we hit a little bump, it's like, are you okay? Because I'm so empathetic. I'm just thinking, I don't want to do anything that makes her feel bad. You know, years later, when I've secured the relationship, I had a bar ditch, almost throw her out of the car and say, stop griping about my driving, you know. Because then I don't care. And once I've secured the relationship, then I don't care anymore. I'm so careful. I remember being so careful in every word that I spoke, because I wanted everything I said to make her feel good and make her like me. That's called empathy. I'm being very careful how I'm making you feel. I'm being very careful, and I'm being very sensitive to everything that's going on and how it could make you feel. And that's a choice. And I stopped choosing to care once I had her relationship secured, and I began to take her for granted, and I began to verbally abuse her, I began to neglect her, I began to treat her badly, and I didn't care. And when she complained to me about the way that I talked to her and the way I treated her, I didn't care, and that was a choice. And the day that our marriage almost broke up, God got to my heart, finally. And Karen was not the problem, I was the problem. And I woke up and I made a decision, and we were out of love, we were out of like. We had no emotions for each other, we were numb, we had fought so much. So nothing changed in my emotions, but I made the choice to be empathetic. Listen to me, you have two components to your soul, your will and your emotions, and one of the most critical decisions in your life is for your will to rule over your emotions and not let your emotions rule over your will. The Bible calls people who let their emotions rule over their will weak-willed people. A million times in your life, you're going to feel like doing something you shouldn't do. And your will has to be over your emotions saying, you can't say that to them. You can't do that. You've got to be a responsible person. You've got to subject your feelings under a responsible will. Okay, a million times in life, you're going to need to do something you don't feel like doing. And your will has to be in control. So your will says, emotions, you're going to care. I don't care how you're feeling. You're going to care. And I woke up that morning when Karen and I were on the brink of divorce. I woke up that morning and I made the decision to care. Isn't it great that we can do that? It's not luck. It's not fate. It's not chemistry. It's choice. And my soulmate was sitting right there hurting. And I didn't care the day before. And that day I woke up and I decided I'm turning my heart back to Karen. And here's the way empathy thinks. I wonder what it would be like to be married to me. And when I woke up that day and I decided to care, I thought to myself, I wouldn't want to be married to me. And sitting in a house all by myself, all day long, taking care of kids. And then to have me walk in the door and not want to talk and not want to participate in the family and not want to open my heart up and not meet any of my needs. What a terrible thing to be married to me. That's the way empathy thinks. I wonder how they feel. I wonder how my words are making them feel. I wonder how my silence is making them feel. I wonder how my absence is making them feel. I wonder how my sarcasm is making them feel. That empathy puts itself into another person's feelings and cares, and it's a choice. And the first time you do it, it's instinctive. When you're dating a person, it's instinctive. The second time you do it, it's intentional. I'm not doing it because of a feeling. I'm doing it because I choose you as my soulmate. I'm choosing you as my soulmate. And I'm choosing to care about you. Your soulmate is a person who cares. They care about you. They're a person who's tuned in. That's what we dream about, is being married to a person who cares about us, who's sensitive to us. That's a choice. It's called empathy. The second choice, and by the way, 5 minutes of empathy a day will resurrect a dead relationship. 5 minutes. You sit down 5 minutes a day and just put yourself in your spouse's place and think, I wonder how they're feeling. I wonder what they're going through. I wonder what I can do to help them today. It'll resurrect a dead relationship. Number two choice of being soulmates is the choice of generosity. It's being generous. Proverbs 11:25, the generous soul will be made rich, and he who waters will also be watered himself. The generous soul, generosity is a choice. It can have emotion with it, but it doesn't have to. I gave to Karen. When I was dating Karen, I gave her words. I gave her kindness. I gave her attention. I gave and I gave and I gave, and out of that, our relationship flourished. And I woke up one day to a dead marriage. And I made the decision to give. We had no emotions. We were not in love. We had no emotions. But the promise of Proverbs 11:25 is reciprocity. Give and it will be given to you. Give and it will be given to you. Whatever you give away will be returned. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over. It will be poured into your soul, your bosom. For whatever measure you use, it will be measured back to you. That's what Jesus says in Luke chapter 6. This says it here. The generous soul will be made rich with whatever it gives away. And so I woke up one day with a dead marriage and I began to give to Karen. Karen had begged me to be physically affectionate. I didn't know how to be affectionate. I had two older brothers, didn't have any sisters. My parents were not affectionate people. My brothers beat me up every day. I promise. I didn't know how to be affectionate. I would pinch Karen's hand. You know, she'd say, hold my hand. I'd pinch around on it because it made me nervous. And I put my arm around her and I put her in a headlock. I thought that was romantic. And she hated that. And she kept saying, can't you just be affectionate with me? Okay. And she also said, can't you just talk to me? And I woke up that morning and I decided I'm going to give to her. And I became affectionate. I'm very affectionate today. I became affectionate. I began to talk to her. Sit down. We sat down face to face and I said, I'll sit here and talk to you until you're satisfied. I'll talk as long as you want to talk. I thought, A, she's going to suck my brain out. And B, I've got to be the greatest man in the history of the world to do this. But let me tell you, it was the most life-giving thing to me, not just to her. But I gave her affection. I gave her communication. I gave her attention. I hung up my golf clubs. I said, I'm not playing golf anymore. And I play golf today. Karen said to me one day after our marriage was healed, she said, go play golf. And I said, excuse me, I think I just heard Jesus. But generosity, one of the most important things that we, it's a choice. But my soulmate is a person who is a giver. And my soulmate is a person that I invest in. And so, you want to be married to a person who's generous with you. And that's what soulmates mean. But it begins with me. Listen, I'm not going to stand back and demand something from Karen I'm not willing to do. And by the way, you don't just reap what you reap where you sow. You can sow in everybody else all day long. But if you're not sowing into your marriage, you're not going to reap from your marriage. And by the way, when you sow your soul, you reap a soul. And that's how you become soulmates. When you give your soul to your spouse, you'll reap their soul. And that's how you bond and become one. One more thing. The third choice is the choice of priority. And that is making your marriage first. Marriage only works in first place. It won't work in any other place. It's got to be before your children, before your work, before church, before anything else except your personal relationship with Jesus Christ. In my relationship, I put Karen first, and we do this. When we're dating, when we're pursuing each other, we put each other first, and then the demands of life, the busyness of life, whatever comes up, we just begin to, in real terms. See, I told Karen that she was first, but she wasn't. Work and golf and friends and everything else were first. But when I hung my golf clubs up and I said no to other things, it proved to Karen in real terms that she was first. Your soulmate is someone who puts you first. Your soulmate is someone who gives to you. Your soulmate is someone who cares about you. But it begins with you. I know some of you may be single, and I hope this message helps you to set you up for success in your future relationship so that you can have the right thoughts in your mind. You need to be compatible. But that doesn't mean sameness. It doesn't mean it's going to be easy. It doesn't mean the emotion's always going to be there. You're going to have to make right choices if you're going to have your soulmate. And when you make right choices, you have positive emotions a lot. And your marriage is good and stable. If you're married, maybe you're married and you're happy. And I hope this helps you, to stay happy. But maybe you're frustrated. Maybe your dating experience was kind of like ours. Maybe, you've had a lot of setbacks like we have. Hey, aren't you glad that we serve a God that's bigger than all that? Amen. And aren't you glad that a good marriage is not for a lucky few? For those of us who have messed it up, and for those of us who have made mistakes, we can get right back on track.
This concludes session 3. Please continue with Becoming One Mind, the next teaching in this series.